We've got the whole crew together as we cover Ohio State
with our instant analysis from Ohio State.
There's something that doesn't feel right.
Unbelievable effort from him today. Is EJ Liddell going to crack the first team All Big Ten?
I think he can be the guy. I'm not trying to start a quarterback controversy.
He seems to have the durability. He certainly has the toughness.
This is the question on a lot of people's minds here.
Welcome to Buckeye Breakdown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Building the Buckeyes. We've got a commitment on our hands this week, which is why I'm joined by SI All-American Director of Recruiting, John Garcia. How's it going, John?
It's going good, Andrew. Good to be back on with you, my friend.
Definitely. So obviously the Buckeyes just landed a commitment from Florida defensive end Kenyatta Jackson, which gives Larry Johnson his first pledge for the current recruiting cycle. So simply put, how big of a commitment is this for the Buckeyes, especially after they beat out finalists Alabama and Oklahoma?
Yeah, Andrew, I think this was actually more of an Ohio State-Oklahoma deal. You know, I was at his game on Friday, and I saw something I'd never seen in 11 years of covering recruiting. He had an Ohio State decal and an Oklahoma decal on the back of his high school helmet. And I'm surprised I've never seen that, but I had never seen that. It's like it would be a South Florida kid kind of announcing a top two that way, as opposed to just tweeting it like everybody else. But this is a huge get for Ohio State. These are the types of kids that they have gone down to South Florida to get, frankly, right? With the Bosa brothers, so on and so forth. And this is another one, at least physically, that seems right in line with that. I don't know if Kenyatta is as polished as the Bosa brothers. And obviously any comparison there is kind of too high praise off rip. But when you talk about the frame, 6'5", 230, and being with him in person pregame, during the game, after the game, there's room to fill out here. So as to where normally we're talking about an elite athlete, and Kenyatta is that right now, very curious to see how his body changes once he hits a big-time strength and conditioning program like Ohio State's. But right now the floor is – Kenyatta Jackson is an extremely physical and long edge rusher out of one of the biggest schools in terms of prospect production in the state of Florida at Chaminade Madonna. He was partially responsible for a dominant win over a very good Gulliver team on Friday night. He had two sacks. He lived in the backfield. It was just kind of easy for him. And when I'm looking at pass rushers, there's certain positions where it's like, it should look easy at certain times. I think ball carriers on offense that are legitimately power five prospects and pass rushers in particular, there should be flashes of dominance and it should look easier than we're used to. And all of that checks out with Kenyatta Jackson. He's matured a lot. He's a team captain, which I think for a kid down there where he's on a team with so many elite prospects, including another Ohio State commitment in Ryan Turner, to be a captain there says a lot about the type of growth he's had. He's not one of these South Florida kids that's run around to all different schools. He's a homegrown four-year guy at Chaminade Madonna. And I spoke to his coach, Damon Jones, after the game, and he said this is a program-changing recruit. And Damon has been around elite prospects for a long time. He was at Chaminade Madonna, and before that, he was at Hollandale, which sent all those kids to Utah, Tyler Huntley, Zach Moss, all of them, Moss, both of them in the NFL right now. So when a coach like that says this is a program-changing type recruit, you tend to listen, especially because this is a state champion coach. He's not hyperbolic very much. And I was kind of surprised when he gave me that quote on Kenyatta, but you could see it on display every time you see the kid. And physically, there's so much more to go with his development that it's so intriguing, a no-brainer take for any school in the country, and for us, a no-brainer SI 99 recruit.
Yeah, and you just mentioned right there that he's a top 99 player, but I feel like he doesn't necessarily get the same kind of publicity maybe as an Omari Abor, you know, or an Anai White. Why do you think that might be?
That's a good question. You know, obviously Abor plays in Texas, right, where, you know, it's all about high school football. The media coverage in South Florida, despite having the most fertile recruiting ground in America, is not quite the same. And compared to White, he's not as well traveled. You know, he took his trips kind of businessman-like in June, And it really didn't take a whole lot of trips after that. Not a whole lot of game visits. Was kind of quiet, really, about his business on Friday nights. Took the three officials. Those were his top three schools, and it was all about the evaluation kind of thereafter. So I think Kenyatta's a quiet kid, or I know Kenyatta's a quiet kid. So I think that's part of it as well. Kind of a student first, captain-like type kid. So doesn't really care about all that social media and the buzz and all that. He's about his team on Friday nights, you know, and again, we got to see it up close and personal on Friday. He is a business-like kid who just wants to go out there and get the job done. So I think off the field, a lot to like about Kenyatta as well. And I think that's part of the reason why he doesn't have as much maybe social media buzz as Abel or Anai White and some of these guys that are either more active on social or just busier with visits.
To that point, it kind of feels as if Ryan Turner, his teammate, is very similar to that. And it's kind of funny then, you know, in that case, they both end up with Ohio State. And they both took their official visits at the same time back in June. And do you think that really like played into, you know, them ending up at the same school?
100%. The two are close. They spent time pregame and postgame together. When I was there, obviously took the trip together. And, you know, Chaminade's one of these power programs in the state of Florida, Andrew, where there's a lot of travel in the offseason. There's a lot of cohesiveness that's created because you're just spending more time with each other. You know, it's a private school. They've got a couple of resources, you know, at their back, which helps to travel and build kind of that chemistry with the team. And you could really see it extrapolate on Friday nights. And for some, you can see it projected onto Saturday. So I think that absolutely helps. The Ohio State reputation in South Florida is extremely strong. We all know the vulnerabilities of recruiting the area relative to the local programs, right? Miami, even the other in-state schools, Florida State. Everyone's been able to go pick and prod down there, and Ohio State's done as good a job as anyone. You know, Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama come to mind as three recruiting powers, Georgia as well, who have all dipped into Miami very consistently. And for Ohio State to have two, you know, Chaminade Madonna Lions headed in, I think says a lot about the longstanding reputation at Ohio State, as well as, you know, shooting your shot with the best, which Ohio State always does.
And I really think you made an excellent point there too, especially with where Florida State and Miami are as programs right now. It feels like those kids, you know, aren't necessarily one wanting to stay home, but then two kind of more ripe for the picking, if that makes sense, just because of where those programs stand. You know, kind of moving forward then, do you feel like Ohio State has this in a bag where they don't have to necessarily worry about a typical South Florida recruitment? Or is this something that, you know, despite that, you know, maybe they're still going to have to recruit these kids for another 2-3 months?
Yeah, you always wonder about that with Floridians in general, right? There's so many schools close to home. There's so many college coaches now that they're back on the road that are stopping in. And heck, at his game Friday, Penn State was there, Pitt was there, Georgia Tech was there, FAU was there. I mean, he's going to be seen and evaluated and pretty much loved by college coaches. But judging how he handled the process leading up to the commitment, I would say this is a secure pledge from Kenyatta. Again, he's not a big social guy. I believe he signs in December, which is, you know, December 15th is less than 2 months away now. I think this is all but wrapped up as far as I can tell with Ohio State. Typically, you don't commit this late in the game and then make a change, especially when you've, again, visited all your contenders, right? He's been to Bama. He's been to Clemson. He's been to Oklahoma, which was, again, for me, kind of the number two in this race. And they've also, in their own right, done a good job in South Florida. Their best defensive player, Nick Bonito, is a Fort Lauderdale guy. Mm-hmm. But I think picking Ohio State, and Ohio State kind of emerging earlier in the summer as the team to beat in this recruitment, tells you a lot about their standing. And to me, tells you that this won't be one to worry about down the stretch.
You know, obviously with the schools that you named, those are really the cream of the crop in college football. And for then Ohio State to kind of win that battle against those schools, what do you think it was about Ohio State that specifically spoke to Kenyatta and why he chose them?
Well, let me pull from geography, and let me pull from another kid in South Florida I saw this week, Shamar Stewart, you know, another elite South Floridian. When I brought up Larry Johnson, I mean, he said he's a legend, and it's a once in a lifetime opportunity to play for somebody like that. So I think that combined with the history of not only defensive ends, and we can really roll down the list here, but specifically in South Florida, all of that, you know, connects with a South Floridian. These kids don't grow up dreaming of playing for Miami or Florida or Florida State anymore, because none of them had really won in their lifetime. You know, the Tebow Urban Meyer run at UF was kind of done when they were children or young children, maybe even before they fell in love with football. And the Jameis Winston FSU run feels like it's even longer ago because of how far FSU has fallen. And there's just a certain caliber of kid who isn't even going to consider a school like that, given the last couple of years in Tallahassee. So the door is wide open, and these kids at a younger age, and again, high profile recruit from an early age at a high profile program who travels, those kids are getting Ohio State offers, you know, a year, two, 3 years ago. So the relationship is fostered, and all of that extra fluff with the reputation of Johnson and what Ohio State's done at that position, it's just hard to compete against. And there's a structure there with Ohio State that really doesn't apply with Alabama and Oklahoma, the other finalists at that position, with the coordinators, with the structure of the coaching staff, and obviously with Larry himself. So all of that, I think, was really hard to go against. And it's part of the reason why OSU won out.
Let me tell you, though, it kind of is hard to believe it's been that long since Miami was relevant. Like, I know it was only, you know, 2002, 2003, but it doesn't seem that long ago. But then when you look at it from the standpoint of these kids as they're making their decisions, like, many of them weren't even born at that point in time.
Well, so all of them at this point, right? Yeah, if they're high school recruits, they were not born the last time Miami was even in consideration for elite status, much less winning national titles. And that's what's really hard to explain to the typical South Floridian who's, you know, our age or older, because they've seen five and should have been six probably national titles. I don't know if I should say that on this podcast, but you know, it was a truly dominant stretch where even when you weren't winning the Natty, you were right there, kind of like Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State right now, right? I mean, it's like, even if you're not number one, you're knocking on the door. So it's really hard for that group to swallow and to deal with, but it is the truth. I mean, these kids have no true knowledge beyond documentaries or YouTube of Miami being a top tier school. And again, it's crazy to say it out loud, but it's absolutely true.
It seems like that's really the case in recruiting, though, is there's a lot of what have you done for me lately. It doesn't matter, you know, all these, you know, these schools can speak about tradition and things like that. But if they're not winning national titles or competing and playing in the playoff or winning all these various individual awards or being first round draft picks, like, you're not going to get these kids.
Plain and simple. If it's not about winning like it used to be when I first started covering recruiting, it's about reputation and sending guys to the league. So all of that stuff usually correlates. And Miami's been able to send a couple guys early, but they weren't superstar homegrown kids for the most part. You know, a couple were transfers and a couple were kind of sleeper recruits. So your high profile Kenyatta Jackson types have been leaving South Florida since, you know, Amari Cooper and those guys started to Teddy Bridgewater, Lamar Jackson. I mean, it's for a decade now. These guys have just left South Florida for the most part, and the homegrown superstars hadn't necessarily panned out if they did go against that trend. So it's an easy pitch to make if you're Ohio State, Clemson, Bama, Georgia, really those four, maybe Oklahoma as a 4B, have been able to do it consistently, and particularly on the defensive side of the ball.
For sure. And there's another program out on the West Coast, USC, that is kind of in a similar situation, just because, you know, people our age watched, you know, Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart and the winning streak there. And it's like, it's hard to wrap your mind around USC not being that program anymore. But then when they have a commitment like Devin Brown, quarterback, you know, and then other schools are getting involved, like Ohio State, who just offered him earlier this week, you start to wonder, like, can schools flip him from that? And specifically when it comes to Ohio State, how do you feel about their chances of flipping him from his pledge?
It's going to be really interesting. I think, you know, Devin has always wanted to play at USC. He's an Arizona kid. I know he's playing his ball in Utah as a senior. He's an Arizona kid. And USC was really the first big time program that said, you know what, you got the green light. So he took it over a year ago when he was still honestly not a great high school quarterback. I mean, he was a good one. You could see the traits, but the production wasn't there. So it was a really nice eval from Graham Harrell, and he always wanted to play at USC. So it was an easy early commitment to gain. But as his profile has risen, big offseason at the Elite 11, for the most part, was right there with Quinn Ewers all offseason at these big events. And then he's like the nation's leading passer as the season gets going. It's really hard to ignore. And a lot of schools have been in on it, right? Ohio State, Texas, Ole Miss, you know, schools with a big time quarterback reputation, even UCLA, local schools trying to flip Devin. So I think now with the coaching change at USC, the day it happened, he told me, I plan on being a Trojan, but I don't know what that new staff looks like. I don't know what kind of quarterbacks they value. And there are a lot of examples of big time quarterbacks that kind of got screwed by the coaching change, and the new staff either didn't like them or kind of continued to recruit them, but with the thoughts of, I'm going to go get my guy, right? A lot of these coaching hires are quarterback driven. So I think of Florida, Dan Mullen. Matt Corral was committed to the Gators at the time. Dan Mullen gets the job, and he's like, I want to go get Emory Jones. That's my guy, which is, you know, looking back, obviously the wrong choice. But Corral gets dropped, and he falls into Ole Miss's lap. So I don't think this is the case with Brown. I think whoever the new USC coach is will value him and try to keep him, and the coaches there right now are doing their best. But he said it when we spoke this week, and he said, an Ohio State offer is different. Like, it feels differently than all the other offers he has. The Ole Miss one is nice. They're doing big numbers with a West Coast quarterback right now with Matt Corral to tie that all together. He's familiar with USC. Sure. Texas is intriguing with that new staff. He hasn't taken a visit, so we'll see. But the Ohio State one, his tone changed talking about OSU. And I would imagine spending a week with Quinn Ewers, he's got a relationship with him and kind of understands a little bit more about the Buckeyes than some of these other schools on the list. So I do think this is going to be a major player in this battle. And if Ohio State has attrition in the quarterback room, which you tell me, I'm assuming is expected, I think that will help the case for Ryan Day and company. And he really respected Coach Dennis coming out to his like rainy, nasty practice and sitting there throughout the entire practice to watch him throw last week. He gets the offer the next day from Dennis and Day, and he's kind of pumped, and it's just a matter of setting that visit for Devin, because he did admit that these visits are going to be the key for this final decision. But as more schools come in, as more big schools come in, you could see him ending up somewhere other than USC, especially because they can't really hire anyone and get him recruiting still for another 6 weeks. It's going to be really close to that early signing period. And Devin is an early grad, early enrollee. So I think Ole Miss, Ohio State in particular, could be in really nice position here. He already visited Ole Miss, and he'll visit Ohio State and Texas. So it could very well come down to those few.
I think it's really interesting to hear kind of West Coast kids talk about Ohio State being that offer that is different. You know, traditionally you have USC is out there, then Oregon has kind of made a splash just because of, you know, it's kind of that newfangled thing or whatever. It kind of reminds me a lot about what Chris Olave kind of said about when Ohio State started recruiting him. You know, he had USC, Utah, and UCLA after him, but then when Ohio State came in, and that was just the thing. And I think I get kind of the sense here with Devin Brown. You know, obviously he's committed to USC. He grew up a USC fan, but at the same time, maybe it's one of those things where he says, hey, I just got to get away. I see what Ohio State is doing. You know, maybe I have to, you know, compete with Quinn Ewers or those kind of things. But at the same time, that might be the best position for him moving forward. And that kind of sometimes outweighs a fan, you know, being a fan for however long.
100%. You know, the fandom gets you in the door, especially early. But yeah, as time goes on, I mean, these are quarterbacks. These are smart kids, right? These are program leaders, you know, face of your program kind of kids. And I think what has helped him open his eyes is, one, he's already gone away from home. He was playing in Utah with Corner Canyon High School, which had Zach Wilson, Jackson Dart the last few years, big time school. And they run a pure spread, up-tempo, quick calls, go, go, go. So his perception of his own ability has changed in the last 6 months, in addition to his profile rising at the same time. So, you know, we talked about Kenyatta Jackson being business-like. Every quarterback has to be business-like in how they go through the process. And the offenses that are proven to work in that up-tempo style, I think, are going to get the benefit of the doubt, which is why I pointed to Ole Miss and Ohio State kind of being, to me, the top group at the end of the day, once he takes the visits, right? Because he's not going to hate the visit. And he's in Utah, so he's a Southern kid or a Southwest kid from Arizona, but he's obviously about to deal with the cold. So I don't think that's going to detract him from Ohio State. So I think him already having left home and had to, you know, hey, I got to be a little bit more mature now, and going through the cold, going through the coaching change, and a scheme change for his own skill set points him to established quarterback cultures like Ohio State, like Ole Miss. Texas could be there by the end of the year, but, you know, things aren't as hot there at UT. So I do think he wants that structure, which again, when it goes back to USC, does the new coach retain Graham Harrell? Is the system similar? Most people expect USC to go for an offensive name. So there's really no guarantee that that type of passing attack will be retained by the new regime. So it's really touch and go, but I think the structure, the establishment, the consistency of Ohio State at that position, plus the visit, is going to resonate here.
I think you made a really good point, though, when you said kind of just his perspective of his own abilities has changed and just kind of who he is, because I think that that's a really big part of it as well. When you sit there and you say, okay, well, I've been a fan of this program forever. I've always dreamed of myself playing at this program. And then you see Ohio State and Ole Miss racking up all kinds of points and all kinds of offensive yards and, you know, being in the
conversation. With West Coast quarterbacks too.
Exactly. And then being in the conversation for Heisman Trophy, like those are all things that he's going to consider. And then he's going to obviously see how that ends up. And if he's planning on making a decision in December, you know, those visits, like you said, are going to be very crucial.
And there's no plan to go back to USC. He was there at the Stanford game, which is basically what got Helton the boot. And he has no plans to be back, which I thought was really interesting. So he basically hasn't gone back for a live look at the interim staff and how they're handling things. Obviously, you could watch on TV and all that stuff, but there's no plans to go back, which I think is kind of telling. You know, if he was an LA kid who could just kind of stop by, fine. But he's an Arizona kid, and now he's a Utah kid, technically. So you can't really just pop over for a quick trip. So I think USC is going all in to try to keep him. But I think even they know that this thing's up in the air. They've kicked the tires on some other quarterbacks on the West Coast. They hadn't offered any, as far as I can tell. But they've been in communication with some others. So I think that tells you a little bit about maybe the worry of losing a Devin Brown. And I would imagine that was punched up a little bit once you see Ohio State and the visit to Ole Miss and Texas involved. I would imagine that USC is probably trying to create a plan of contingency here.
I'd say once that Ohio State offer got made public, I'm sure that they were not too thrilled with where their quarterback room is sitting moving forward. So, you know, moving on, I want to last talk about Iowa safety Xavier Nwankwo, who just announced last night that he'll make his college decision between Iowa, Notre Dame, and Ohio State on December 8th. He obviously took an official visit with the Hawkeyes last weekend, and then he has unofficial visits scheduled for South Bend and Columbus over the next 2 weeks. So how do you see that one kind of playing out over the next 2 months?
This is going to be a fun one. I think it's a lot tougher to decipher than Kenyatta Jackson, for instance. I think this one is really up in the air. It feels a little bit more like Devin Brown's. The difference is he's got more familiarity really with all three of these schools, right? They're all Midwest programs. They're all semi-local, but I think separating to these three and saying no to A&M, which I thought with Mike Elko was going to be kind of a sneaky pick here because they're in it for all the top safeties right now, it seems like A&M is. So to have him kind of move on from them, I thought was really interesting. I thought they were a bit of a dark horse. But now, you know, we hear more Ohio State, Iowa. I think the Notre Dame visit will be kind of the last ditch effort from the Irish. And look, they've got the easiest sell on the field, right? Hey, this is Kyle Hamilton. Look what he's going to do. Come replace him. But with a kid like Xavier, I don't think it's that simple. I think if it was, he'd be committed already, maybe a long time ago. He would be verbally committed. Like I said, there's extreme familiarity with a lot of these programs, and he's going to get a closer look at the other two. But I see this as kind of a classic, do you go with your head, do you go with your heart kind of decision. Ohio State obviously has a reputation in and of itself with defensive backs. I think just as easily as Notre Dame could sell Kyle Hamilton, Ohio State can sell, hey, you know, our secondary maybe hasn't been what it used to be. Come help us get back to what we know, especially at safety. So I think there's always a sell with these programs, but I just see this as more of a, do you go with your head, which is Ohio State structure. All the stuff I said about Kenyatta Jackson kind of applies here to another SI-99 recruit. Or do you stay home? Are you going to be that Hawkeye recruit? And Iowa recruits in a unique way, and their defensive reputation is similar, right? You always know that group is going to show up, and they produce on that side of the ball, not only at the collegiate level, but even going to the NFL, I would say more than people realize. Are you going to be that guy who stays home for them, or are you going to go where the competition is a little bit better every day in practice and play against your hometown school? And I don't think that's easy. And I think that's why he's allowing himself a little bit more time. I wouldn't be able to peg the recruitment at this time, other than it feels more like an Ohio State, Iowa battle, maybe in that order, but it's close, which means that things can change. And I thought Iowa getting the last official visit was really interesting here, right? We were talking about with Devin Brown that he can't just pop over to USC. I mean, Xavier can just pop over to Iowa. So I thought them getting a late official was really intriguing with him valuing the hometown program. And we still got a long way to go for his verbal commitment. So I think it could still move in either direction. But I think I would be surprised if he ended up at Notre Dame at the end of the day. This again feels more like a Big Ten battle.
I did think that the timing of his official visits were really interesting. One, in that, you know, he has those visits to Notre Dame and Ohio State coming up. So it kind of nullifies, in my opinion, the hoopla of it being an official visit to Iowa, because it's really just boom, 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 back to back to back, as opposed to being like a very clear, you know, defined official visit where he doesn't have anything else around it. And Iowa had the last kind of say in that respect. At the same time, his official visit to Ohio State in early June was with every single commitment in the class and several other top targets, including Zion Branch, who's another safety target of theirs. And I think that, in my opinion, what that's ultimately going to come down to is, you know, you talk about playing at home, playing for Iowa, you know, all the stuff that comes with that. But I think there's a sense that he finds a little bit of home with the Ohio State commits, if that makes sense, just because they're all so close, you know. And if you watch them talk or see how they interact on social media too, you'll see CJ Hicks always tweeting it at Xavier. And it's kind of one of those things where they're just building that relationship that kind of seems like that will ultimately be what wins him over.
And it very well may be. You know, these recruitments are hard. These recruitments are very hard. Ohio State's proven that they can go out and win them. So it's easier to give them the benefit of the doubt. But I think when it's, you know, within the same conference, it does make it a little bit harder. This is probably the best recruit in Iowa. And I mean, you would know better than me up that way in several years, I would say, from my perspective. So are you... How do you deal with that? You know, down south, we see it in kind of that SEC footprint a lot, right? Kids from Auburn High School that end up at Alabama, like they deal with different stuff. Mm-hmm. Dylan Moses committing to Alabama from Baton Rouge and getting death threats. You know, I don't think it's going to be like that in Iowa, but it is something to consider in the day and age of social and all that stuff. So I think there's a lot of factors here, but again, for me, it just comes down to, do you go with your head or do you go with your heart? And, you know, I've only talked to him once, and he's an articulate kid. He's seems like a thoughtful kid. And that doesn't help me try to make a prediction on this recruitment. So it's going to be very fun to watch down the stretch. And again, like you said, every school's going to get their shot here down the stretch as well. So you wonder if December 8th, you know, that's right in that coaching carousel window. So you're curious to see if there is some movement with some assistants, which at, you know, if all things are kind of close and then boom, one of your positional coaches or coordinators moves on. Not saying I have any scoop on that, but yeah, you never know. Late in the game, there's going to be a lot of movement in the carousel, as LSU has shown us, USC. I think Miami could come open, and there's gonna be a lot of dominoes this year. So committing so close to that part, I think could be a sneaky play here at the end of the race as well. So a lot of eyes will be on this. And I think leading up to it, I don't think we'll get more clarity after these visits. I think it's going to come basically when the world finds out where he's going.
I'd say he's going to say all the right things up until December 8th and not gonna give anybody any hints.
I think so.
Along those same lines, I think it's probably more important for Iowa to actually win this battle, just because of he's also the teammate of Caden Proctor, who's one of the top offensive linemen for next cycle.
Right.
So I think that, you know, it's going to go a long way in terms of how the Big Ten kind of shakes out in that respect moving forward.
That's a good point. You never underestimate peer recruiting. I think coach to prospect recruiting is always kind of what it is. But with the peer recruiting, you never know how that could sway and swing things. And these kids are as close as they've ever been, because it's year round and recruiting is earlier than it's ever been. So yeah, that's a very good point to bring up. You never know how all those little data points can push things one way or the other.
Absolutely. Well, that'll do it for this week's episode of Building the Buckeyes. For John Garcia, I'm Andrew Lynn. Thanks for listening.